Good afternoon. My name is Terry, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Terry.
And this is by far the largest group I've ever been asked to speak before. I'm a little bit intimidated. When Reggie asked if I would speak, I thought in an AA meeting, and we're told not to say no, sure. Convention? Well, there's an AA convention going on for women. We women alcoholics, we're meeting at the college in New Britain today, and I thought, when she first called, that went through my mind, and I said, but wait a minute, I know the people on the committee. They're Al-Anon. Did you speak to Al-Anon? Marty said, yeah, okay. Well, I can only speak as an AA speaker, and in AA they suggest that I tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like for me today, and I'll try to do that. I started drinking when I was 15 at my sister's wedding. I was the bridesmaid. She was the bride, I was the bridesmaid. At least I forget what role I was. I think the wedding went okay, I really don't know. You'd think I was the bride. See, it's, 40 years later, I still don't know who the hell I was. But anyway, that's where I had my first drink. And I got drunk, went into a blackout, and threw up all over the gown. Now, what's interesting about that is that nobody said anything about that. Not my family, friends. My mother yelled at me because the gown was rented. And I understand with hindsight today why. Drinking was normal, not only for me, but the area that I came from. If you don't know and you haven't figured out, I'm not from here. I'm from Portland, Maine, and born and raised there, in a place called Gorham's Corner. Now, I even come from a renowned area, not necessarily known for all the wonderful things that people did that come out of there, although there are, and certainly today, many people that have come out of Gorham's Corner that have done some fine things in life, and they're doing fine. But there's also, I'm one of them. Most of us traveled this alcoholic road to get there, though. Lots of alcoholics there. I can remember walking through the alleyways and playing, and I knew what canned heat was before I was 7. I heard it later in life, and people, what's canned heat? Well, I know what canned heat is. One of the jobs I even had first, one of my first jobs in retail in Portland, Maine, was where they sold supplies for camping and so forth. And, you know, the guy would come up and say, now, you know, Teresa, you can't sell canned heat to the bums. Don't worry, I know them all. And I did. If they would come in, they were friends of the family. I can't sell you this. You'll get me fired. You know. So anyway, they really do put it over a fire and ring it through a sock. And there it is, their sock off their feet, too. Oh, my God. I never got that low. I'm so glad. Oh. But in any case, Gorham's Corner was a fine place to come for, and I'm proud to say that I have come from there. And to connect me again to there, many, many years later, I was at Kensington, one of my home group meetings, and we had a woman speaker there, and she told her story, and she said she was from Gorham's Corner. And I poked the person next to me and said, see, I told you there was a Gorham's Corner. I said, and I know she knows me and I know her, because you can't come from Gorham's Corner if you're not connected. You know who she turned out to be? My babysitter. In the rooms. 35 years later, here we are. And of course, our families did indeed. I went to school with her brother. And I'm happy to say that we have remained friends in this fellowship. She's my bingo partner now. And so that's my background, somewhat. I had 4 sisters. My father was an alcoholic, and he died early at the age of 42 from this disease, leaving my mother a widow. I was 17 at the time. I also graduated when I was 17. So between the ages of 15 and 17, I had a lot of fun with alcohol, even though I never thought about a drink. I don't get that. I haven't had a drink in 22 years, and I still don't think about a drink when I think about it. And I do think about it a lot, you know, especially in the summer when that beer, I love beer. I just don't understand a drink. Never did, never will. To me, you get drunk, you get drunk. You'd think I'd known there was a problem, but who knew? Who educated anybody back then? Certainly not where I came from. And I had a lot of fun with alcohol back then. I drank with the girls that were a little bit older than me. We went to the bars in Maine, and I don't say clubs, they were bars. They were fishermen bars. Longshoremen bars. But everybody knew me because they knew my mother and my father. My father was a fisherman. My mother worked in the bars. So they used to come over to me. I was underage, and they'd come over to me. I had a beer in front of me and say, for Christ's sake, Teresa, move that beer before your mother comes in and sees it. She'll kill me. Now, nobody talked about the authorities when you think about that. Move that beer because your mother will kill me. You know, and that's the way it was, so I'd move it over to Pat, because Pat was 21, or Margaret, because Margaret was 21. And we had a lot of fun. Man, I could dance up a storm, and I was hot, and I knew it. You know? Margaret was a hairdresser, and she got us wigs that went down to here. And I had my hair up, different colors. I was her model. And she put that wig on, and I knew I was something. So I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I never lacked for a dance, never lacked the companionship. You know, when you come from that corner, there's four and five generations, and so I was never really lonely. Although, things went on in the household that you just didn't talk about. You know, things like we were hungry, we were cold. I knew what that was like. And my mother's sin was one of pride. If my father went on a fishing trip and didn't bring the money in because he either owed it or he drank it in Virginia or somewhere, I came from a pretty prominent family in Portland, and my mother never wanted to tell them. So if they would drop by and they would see that there was no food in the house, we would be okay. But my mother, her pride, she just hated to say, you know, that we were hurting again. And you know, sometimes we didn't have heat, sometimes we didn't have oil. And I can remember all of us sleeping on a couch with every, blanket and coat we had just to keep warm. When I went to school, we lived in, you know, really poverty neighborhood, and I was going to graduate from high school, and I was the first in the family that was going to do that. And I used to keep my books in the refrigerator because we had cockroaches, and that was the only place they were safe. Now, I never talked about that. You know, you just didn't talk about that extreme poverty. It was just the way it was. So when I was 17, I met the man that was to be my husband, and he was a friend of my older sister. And we drank together, and we had a lot of fun together. And we moved to Connecticut because of alcohol, but I didn't know that then. You know, I thought we were drinking together and having a good time, and I was in love. Man, was he handsome. Woo! I know now I was in luck, but I didn't know that then. I figured, man, this got to be love. And we had a fight, an alcoholic fight, drunk fight. You know what he was doing? He was taking our booze, watering it down for me, because he used to meet me at work to get my share of the money. Now, think about all this. I try to remind myself of this frequently. You know, if you date me today, you better make more than me. It ain't happening. Because we used to come and meet me at work at the retail store so I could give him half the bottle for the booze, because he could go to the liquor store and get it. So by the time I'd get there, and we're going to have a few drinks together before we get out of the dock, I'm not getting drunk like I used to. What are you buying? You know, I never seem to get a buzz on anymore. Oh, it's because I mix it with lemonade, he'd say. Whatever. So I arrived at his house early one night, and he and his brothers and his friends were drinking my booze. Man, I saw red. There was a picture of the Last Supper on his house, and I threw it at his head. I never knew I was violent, but I was mad. So we had this big fight. I was going to throw him out the window next, but his brother caught me. The window was open. So they suggested I might want to leave, so I went down to the bar, and I'm telling everybody we know how Bill beat me up. I was so mad. Excuse me. I humiliated him so, because no matter what, you don't hit women. So he didn't have a defense, because they were all drunk. They don't really remember what happened. So it was whatever I said. I'm telling you the truth today. I lied then. So he kind of couldn't show his face, and at the same time, he had friends working here in New Britain at Stanley with this much job. And, you know, there wasn't very many job opportunities for us back then in the 60s, unless you had an education. And so he came down here to get a job, and people weren't speaking to him, nor his brothers, his fathers, my mother, my father. And I'm sorry, not my father, his father. I didn't have a father then. Just the family. So I followed him down. I missed him, and I followed him. I just arrived one day with 7 suitcases. Here I am. So anyway, we ended up getting married. And I didn't drink a whole lot. I didn't. When we got married, I really thought I had it all. I was married to this very handsome man. He had a nice job. A couple of months later, I got pregnant. I really felt, now I had never heard the word goal in my life, but today I understand that I felt like I had really had everything I could want for life. I mean, I wasn't raised to think I would ever get a career or a job. I just never thought about it. I was just going to be a housewife, and I was so happy. Anyway, the marriage didn't work out very well, even throughout the pregnancy, although it's important that I tell you I didn't drink with the first child. Shortly after he was born, he was about, I don't know, 3 weeks old. I knew then that the marriage was a mistake and it was sour. And I was good at just packing up and leaving. So I just got a U-Haul, packed up, and went home. And my mother was furious. How dare I leave a man who had a steady income? It didn't matter what he did, what he didn't do, what I did, what I didn't do. The man had a steady income. Wow, that was a big deal from where I came from. And so it was a big deal to his father, too. And back then, you kind of listened to the peers. So my mother put the word out in the street, don't anybody help her. Because she needs to be back with her husband. They have a child. They need to raise that child. So I went on welfare, and I ended up in this one... one-room furnished apartment that didn't even have a bathroom. That's just like a story in itself. But what was different was the way I drank. I took the first welfare check, doesn't everybody, and bought beer. I liked beer. That was my choice. And that was the first time that I drank for something different. It wasn't for fun. I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I had... felt like I had nobody left in my life. I was all alone with this little boy, and what was I going to do? Well, might as well drink. So that was when I started to drink for oblivion. I just didn't even want to face the world. And I'm sorry to say, I went on for until I found AA with that feeling. And that was from the age of 19 to 20 until I found the rooms at the age of 33. I never really wanted to live. When I started drinking for different, it stayed that way. Anyway, the family, we ended up going back together again, and I can remember coming back to Connecticut, and we had a deal. He didn't want this marriage any more than I did, but our parents just wouldn't hear of anything different. And so he came to get me, and he brought me back to Connecticut, and the deal was that he would play husband and provide, but I was to be quiet about his comings and goings. But he would certainly provide for me and any children we would have. Well, I really never thought I could take care of myself, so I thought, well, all right. I have nowhere else to go. I drank every single day. Every single day. The only time I didn't drink is when I was having a nervous breakdown or in the hospital having a child. Now, he kept his end of the bargain very well. He became an excellent provider. I had anything I wanted. He never denied money or material things. Was never an issue. We went on to have 2 more children, and they were 2 little girls, and I drank during those pregnancies. And periodically, I would try to commit suicide. And I didn't succeed, obviously. I wasn't very good at it. Not for want of trying. We went on financially to do very well. We bought a beautiful home, had a huge backyard. There was an above-ground swimming pool, a little pool for the kids, a couple of swing sets. I could have whatever I wanted. Let me tell you what I ordered. I had no sense of who I was or what I wanted. What do I know? I had a girlfriend that had Spanish furniture. Oh, that's pretty. Oh, I went and ordered. Now, I didn't just go to the store and buy this stuff off the shelf. They had to make it. Red and gold. Then I went to Sears and had drapes made to match. And I bought a Red Bull and a red matador. And I bought swords. Lovely. Then I had a girlfriend who was into colonial. That's nice. Let's do the rec room in colonial. I sobered up and roared. Who the hell makes this stuff? I absolutely roared. It was awful. Well, anyway, to get back to the drinking, that tells you that financially he kept his end of the bargain. Let me tell you how well I did. I was the family financer because I was the educated one. So I took care of the checkbook. Now, I don't know if any of you in this room happen to know this, but alcoholism is a progressive disease. I just thought I'd share that. What happens to people when they, if you're an alcoholic and you put this beer in you or alcohol, it sets off this allergy or reaction. I didn't know this stuff before, folks. You taught me this. Meaning I can't stop. Well, I didn't know that. All I thought was I want to. Six packs. Now, all along with the kids, I'd have to work. Sometimes I go to work because I was bored, but that's another whole story. I would, in the wintertime, I would have it delivered. Well, you needed to have $10 to have a delivery. Well, you know, back then you could get 2 6-packs, a pack of cigarette and ice cream chips or something for the kids, all for $10. It was cool. And I'll tell you another interesting coincidence. When I sobered up and found myself in the rooms of AA, this guy comes over and he says, "You don't know me, do you?" "No." He says, "Well, I'm not surprised." "I used to deliver to your house your booze." Not a clue. Oh, who looked at his face? Here's the money goes. So that's how I drank. But you know, $10, that adds up. I don't care how much, he's just a working man, for crying out loud. You start writing these checks and then you start lying. Because you know what? The money begins to run out. So I started saying things like, well, you know, the grocery bill went up. The mortgage went up. The lights went up. The kids' clothes are costing way too much. All the excuses. All the excuses you could use. What ended up happening is I pretty much drank the house away, in a nutshell. We sold it before we actually lost it because we knew we were in big financial trouble and we couldn't afford this house anymore. And what was beginning to happen to me was as I drank these 2 6-packs and then wanted that feeling for oblivion, now I'm on sleeping pills. See, I didn't know enough to take the morning drink. I should have. They all might have been better off, but I didn't know that, so I would wake up in the morning and I would be shaking, but I didn't know what to do for that. And all the time I'm being diagnosed with mental illness. Well, yeah, true, but, you know, the reason for it wasn't what they said. In any case, If I wasn't in family therapy, I was always in some kind of therapy. And things were beginning to happen, like the house, one time the washing machine ran over, and maybe it was 3 days later I figured it out, and by the time I got down there, the tiles were all up. The home was becoming a pig pen. When we did finally put it on the market, the real estate agent begged us to clean it. It was that bad. I had a real hard time doing that. So the house just sold, and real estate was good back then. It basically just sold for what we paid for it. We didn't make any money, and we ended up living in a four-room furnished apartment with, of all things, the Spanish furniture. Took the Spanish furniture with me. It was to be a couple of years before I found the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Also, what was beginning to happen is, you know, he drank every weekend and came and go as he pleased, and I'm not supposed to say anything. Well, you know, it kind of bothered me, but I'm doing my own thing. I'm just going into oblivion every night. But once in a while on the weekend, you know, I just couldn't drink that fast enough. So sometimes I'd be awake when he came home. Well, you know, now we're meeting and we're fighting. I'll tell you just a couple of incidences, because you could get a really, you've heard all this before, I'm sure, if you haven't lived it. By the way, I'm sorry for all of you people for what all of we alcoholics have ever done to you. God bless you. Apologize to my family daily. I've learned to mend on just saying I'm sorry. I need to live it. In any case, one morning I woke up and the kitchen chair was out the window in the driveway. Well, I don't know how that happened. I never asked. I just don't know. Another time I woke up and the phone was completely off the wall. Sometimes I would wake up in the morning and there would be blood. That used to frighten me because I had no memory and I didn't know whose the blood was. Thank God that was most of the time mine. I used to try to kill myself or I'd throw something and be drunk and break the glass. It was insane. He's bigger than me. And I used to think I could beat him up when I got drunk. So he used to call the cops on me. In those days, they used to come, and they didn't do what they did today. So they'd come and they'd say, Mrs. Fire, when we leave, will you be good? Oh, no, I'd say, I'm going to kill that son of a bitch the minute you walk out the door. He'd say, see? And I'd say, oh, but you don't know what he's doing to me. They were so kind. They were so nice. And Mrs. Farr, we're going to call the sergeant. Will you talk to the sergeant? And please, please be good. So they put the sergeant, Mrs. Farr, this is Sergeant so-and-so. How you doing? I'm not doing good, I'd say. Say, you know, if you can't promise my officers you're going to be okay, I'm going to have them take you out of there. Well, I'm not going to be okay, so you might as well have them take me out of here. Okay, give me the number of your girlfriend. And that's what they would do. They would take me over to my girlfriend's house. And those are some of the things that happened. I just wanted to backtrack because that happened in the house when we were living in the Taj Mahal. Now we're in the four-room furnished apartment, and I'm not any better. I'm worse. I had two, and I still have, two beautiful women, but they were little girls then. One was as dark as the other was light, and they used to have long, beautiful hair, and I used to love to comb their hair and put pipe curls in it and so forth before they'd go to school. They had a lot of beautiful clothes, and I used to like to dress them, my little dolls. And it reached the point where I got up in the morning and I couldn't do their hair anymore, so I cut it. And they had to go to school like that. I had a little boy who now he's 13, and I think he's nuts. He's just out there. In the meantime, I'm just drinking every single night. The house is just horrible. I don't have too many memories. It's like in and out foggy, lots of fog. And I used to try to seriously commit suicide and take anything that I could. And then I used to try to say, well, I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. And another thing that I did with my little Katie, which I always have to talk about this because I have to remind myself how far down and how hurtful I was, not just mentally and emotionally to my children and my family, but physically. I can't stand before you and say, I never physically hurt my children. I can tell you I never intended to, but I did. I used to play this game, 8 o'clock is I'm not going to the package store. But I could never make it. And one night in my memory, I grabbed Katie's hand. She's just a little girl, because when I sobered up, she was 7. So she's probably 6, I don't remember exactly. And I got her little hand, and I'm carrying up to the package store, and she fell. And she's crying, and I took her hand, and I jerked it, and I said, hurry up. And she's crying, Mommy, I'm bleeding. And I said, not now, not now, not now. And I ran to that package store, and I got my beer. And then I attended her. I don't ever want to forget I did that. By the grace of God, she's okay. But I do believe if I had a child that ran into the road and a truck was coming, I'd have said the same thing. Not now. Not now. Nazi was exhibiting bizarre behavior. Oh, gee, I wonder why. So I signed him into UConn to have his head examined. Well, they're smart people, these professionals. There's a problem, all right, and it isn't him. They suggested family counseling at Wheeler Clinic. In the meantime, I would like to think I survived my last suicide attempt. I had taken everything that I could possibly think of, and for reasons that's for another story down the line somewhere, I was alone in the house that night, and I know that I drank all day long, and I took whatever medications I might have had, and when I woke up in the morning, I was angrier than I had ever been in my life, angry to have been alive. I woke up in my own urine and in my own vomit. The house was horrible, and I did not know what to do. I didn't want to live at all, and I sure couldn't die. But I remembered that counselor with the Wheeler Clinic thing, and I called her. They're smart people. When AA asks me to avail myself of outside professional help, I certainly do that today. So I called this lady at Wheeler Clinic, and I went to see her. And for the first time, I talked about my drinking. And the suicide was the number one, because I was angry that I was alive. And she said to me, she said, you know, Terry, she said, chances are, oh, and I got to tell you another thing. This is another thing that I felt. When I looked at my children, I didn't feel anything. And I didn't know how to express that. I knew it was wrong. But I just didn't feel anything in my heart or in my stomach. I knew in my head I should have loved these children, but I couldn't feel anything. There was no feeling left. I was like really the walking dead. So this counselor said to me, she said, you know, Terry, one of these days you will succeed with this suicide. That's for sure if you keep going. She said, but had you thought about the legacy you might leave behind? Well, of course not. I just listened. She says, you have these 3 kids. She says, they're going to come home and they're going to find your body, chances are. And they're going to wonder for the rest of their lives what they did that their own mother didn't want to live. I never thought of that. Somewhere from the depths, now I know it was what spirituality, the good Lord lives within me, felt that little bit of twinge. And for the first time, I said, what do I do? She said, you probably need to be detoxed, and you probably need to go into a treatment center. I would suspect you're an alcoholic. Nobody ever told me that. Man, it was better than mental illness. Took to it like a duck to water. Man, I went into detox at New Britain General Hospital. I don't want to bore you for too long. You know how some of those speakers are. They think they're so important, you got nothing better to do than listen to them. So I keep a watch. I so want to talk about my recovery. You can just imagine, obviously, I'm standing here without a drink. I've had continuous sobriety since September of 1981. Thank you. I didn't expect that. Thank you, I didn't expect that. Wow, you made me cheer up. You helped me with that and every member of Alcoholics Anonymous that's ever crossed my road. I cannot believe how blessed I am. It's easy for me to stand here and tell you this now. But let me tell you about some of the struggles of trying to stay sober. You know, in AA, and I don't mean to be vulgar, if there's a child in here, I'm sorry, but I was sobered up by Hardcore, Hardware City. This, the best group there ever was. And I couldn't work and I couldn't think when I sobered up, so I used to go to meetings in the afternoons and I used to go to meetings at night. And fortunately for me, the man I was married to stayed home and watched the kids so I could go, so I really owe him my life, and I'm very aware of that. So I go to AA and you know, you tell me don't drink and go to meetings. Well, that's good because that's all I could grasp. I couldn't read. I really couldn't read. I would look at the big book in literature and I could see the words, but there was no comprehension there. I couldn't do math. I couldn't do 1 and 1 and see 2. And I was still in counseling and they said that may come back and it may not. Okay. One more vital part of my story when I want to get onto my recovery is I must have been sober probably around 9 months. And you know, I sit in those AA meetings and those fellow alcoholics, man, they're having miracle and blessing after miracle. Shit, nothing's happening to me. I'm not drinking and I'm sober, but I'm going home to those 3 wacky kids. They were nuts. And I'm sober. And this husband, who obviously does not love me or care, he's just doing whatever he has to do for his kids. You know, the house took me 2 years to clean. The 4-room apartment. Incredible. So I'm going to AA and I'm saying, nothing's happening to me. Oh, I'm so glad nothing happened to me. You see, God in his wisdom, my higher power, as I learned to understand him, is a lot different than maybe some people's. I'm sober about 9 months and I'm coming from an AA meeting and I'm still feeling suicidal. But I don't know who to talk to about that. I mean, everybody in AA is blissfully happy. And I want to die. So I used to go to church every day. St. Mary's is right next door. And I used to light candles, geez, anything, just anything. And one day I'm leaving, and I see this prayer card, and it's spelled like my... I never knew my mother named me after a saint, and my name is spelled exactly like Saint Therese. I said, whoa, I didn't know that. So I pick up this card, and I read it. It says, if I pray to her, she'll send me a sign of roses. Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Yep. The man in my life is definitely going to buy me roses. And I got 3 underage kids. Well, we'll give this a shot. So I says to this saint, if by today I don't get, and I'm not going to give her much time because I'm tired of feeling this way. If by today I don't get roses, I'm friggin' checking out. I'm done. I'm just not going on. I'm not doing this. It's too painful. So I go home thinking, all righty, I'm getting ready for the big one, the big suicide, the one that's going to end it for sure. I'm kind of humorous now, but I truly was in the absolute depth of despair, and I know that now. In walks my daughter Amy with a fist full of roses. Thank you. True story. True story. My Amy and my roses. She must have been 12 at the time, And I said, my God, and I got a rush. I know now my first spiritual awakening from my head to my toes. Where did you get the roses, Amy? Oh, some guy gave them to me in his yard. She since told me she stole them. Don't you think God has a great sense of humor? I can share with you from that day to this, I have never, ever wanted to die again. Ever. No matter what the cards were dealt to me, I always knew that hope was here for me, the theme of your wonderful convention. I truly don't believe we alcoholics can stay sober without you. And you don't need to be complimented. You know who you are and what you do. But let me tell you a little bit about what you've done for me. I really don't have a whole lot of friends that aren't in the fellowship. Most of them, of course, were the guys. Because it's, well, look at the opposite. Most of you are women, you know. You're women recovering. So I became very good friends with many, many of the wives of my fellow alcoholics, very good friends. And I have to truly tell you from the other side, when the book said, when Bill said, we, those alcoholics, those men alcoholics, choose the best wives, absolutely you are. Dear God, applaud yourselves. You're wonderful. Thank you. There's just one thing. Now, you knew there was a but. You knew that. You know, with groups of people, when you kind of get together and you socialize and husband and wife may have little disagreements. Happens in recovery. Happens to everybody. How can it not? You're human. See? And you women will turn to me and say, see, Terry, I'll try to get my advice. What the hell's wrong with you? I think like him. I don't get your point. I too do not know why you're upset. And fortunately, we end up with all this wonderful humor. But I got to tell you, I have some beautiful friends. I'll tell you a little bit of the wonderful blessings that have come my way. One is I was a shit for a mother because of this disease. But the God has blessed me with 5 grandsons. Can you imagine? And I am the best grandmother there ever was. Thanks to you. One of these children, the first was born, his mother was 16. The second was born, his father was in prison. The third were born illegitimately. Here I am. You see, we didn't get better. We're not going to get better. It's a family disease. My children struggle in life. They're not going to do everything with the white picket fence and what society... Who says society's right anyway? You know what I tell them all the time? Pull yourself up by the bootstraps and get going. Make a mistake and make it right. So what? I don't care what society says. All I care is that we're together. It's a family. We do my best friends are my daughters. We do so much together. I've recently been asked to become the temporary guardian of my 12-year-old grandson. Oh, Christ, I'm 55. And it's not easy. I'm not going to stand here and tell you when I lived happily ever after because I didn't drink. Bull. What I had to learn through you and my fellow members of Alcoholics was to learn to live life on life's terms. And that's not always roses. For me, yes, Maybe not for you. So, it's been a hard road to hoe. My mother passed away about, I don't know, I was trying to figure it out with Marie. I think it's about 10 years ago. And my sister, one of them, was upset with my reaction to that. And so she called me up. Typical sick Alan on her. And I'm in recovery. And she's going to proceed to tell me how I should act. See? And she's upset because I'm not upset. I'm full of this peace. See? How the hell do you get so peaceful? I said, well, maybe if you went to Al-Anon, you'd learn. Because you know what? I'm not going to listen to you. There's help out there for you, just like there was for me. Our father was an alcoholic. We were all affected. And I'm not talking about mine. You need to go for Dad. You need to go for yourself. You learn what this peace is. Mary, there's nothing like it. And I hung up from her. Guess what? She joined Al-Anon. 7 years. 7 years. A couple of years ago, she called me up and she says, hey, want to take a cruise? Sure. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm with the sickest of the sickest. But you know, you got to be the best sister in sobriety, the best daughter, the best mother. You try. That's what I'm learning. I take this cruise to the Caribbean with this lady who is marvelous. Oh my God. You can't even believe the two of us got up in the morning praying and meditating. She from her Al-Anon and me from my AA. We go to bed at night, we're on our knees. We don't even live in the same state. This is the way we really live. We laugh so hard, people call us the Laughing Sisters. And we won $750 at bingo. I cruised to Alaska in my sobriety. I have a wonderful job. I'm running out of time, and I don't like to do that to people. But I can't thank you enough for inviting me to speak. I was awfully intimidated and frightened. But I've looked at your faces, and you just made me feel so very, very welcome. I want to congratulate all of you, and God bless you. Thank you very much.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com. Thank you.